Broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, starts now. This, my fellow Americans, is the broadcast for November the 1st in the year of our Lord, 2021. This is hour one of two, and our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio and the traditions of our founding fathers. Yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen, we use the blueprint for liberty, the supreme law of the land, the Constitution for the United States of America. That is our guide. And absolutely, we're convinced the checks and balances brilliantly put in place by the founding fathers, one of the great peaceful restorative solutions we have at our fingertips. As you know, we reject revolution. We stand for peaceful restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. Welcome to Liberty Roundtable Live. A quick recap of Saturday's show ought to suffice. Man, we had three incredible guests for the Week in Act conference first hour. First one, Patricia Kent, founder and board member of Liberty Action Coalition. Educate to liberate, she says. LibertyGuardians.us is one of their websites. LibertyActionCoalition.us is the other one. And it's really, really critical. They're saying, hey, we have got to take back the schools. And I appreciate Patricia's point, and I agree for the most part. But you know what? You've got to just take your kids out of the schools. None of this protesting and going to school boards and being called a terrorist by your government and all this stuff. Just take your kids out and say, you know what? You can call me a terrorist, government, media, you out-of-control thugs, but I'm just going to take my kids out. God gave me my children, and I will not let you lord over them in such a satanic, godless way. We're not doing that around here. Thank you, goodbye. And if enough parents did that, even 20%, 15%, 10%, if a significant number of parents in the millions did that, instantly the con game would be over. Okay? The godless government bureaucrats lording over your children, teaching them dishonest critical race theory, immoral sexual, whatever you want to call it. They say it's education. I don't even call it education. Perversion. Okay? The con game would be over. You'd simply say, you're not doing that to my kid. Thank you. Goodbye. Then the government schools would absolutely fail and go away and would break ourselves free of the 10th plank of the Communist Manifesto. That's what it is, okay? So I don't understand why these parents just riot and rage, and then the government calls them terrorists, and then they have this battle. You know what? Just jettison the battle altogether. Just say, we will not let godless institutions run amok in our country and run amok lording over and educating and indoctrinating our children's minds. We're not doing that anymore. Thank you. So anyway, I appreciate the efforts, and any efforts to help the government schools fly righter, I guess to some degree, good efforts. But you know what? They're not too good of efforts to me, because at some point you prop up the very godless system that you pretend to reject. So if you keep your kids in and say, well, we're going to beat on the school board and make it fly right, all you're doing is making communist schools try to fly right. If it wasn't for good people like you all in it, then it might fail on its own, under its own weight anyway. So it's to some degree, you're propping up your own demise when you work within that system. Ladies and gentlemen, jettison it ASAP, would you please? I beg you to get your kids out of the government sex indoctrination cesspool, the indoctrination of dishonesty, dividing Americans left and right, indoctrinating them and inculcating them into all kinds of godless theories. Wow, I don't even know where to go with this except to say, you know what, wake up already. Get it done. Our second guest on, we had Seth Keschel, doing a great job. He's a strategic analyst with a group called America's Project, building a support and empowerment network of and for pro-freedom organizations, businesses, and individuals, powering the people to save America. AmericaProject.com. Great interview. Seth Keschel was with us. We also talked to David Clements. Don't lie. The election was indeed stolen. Amen to that reality check. He also talked about critical race theory must be rejected. theprofessorsrecord.com is the website for Professor David Clements, doing a phenomenal job. So we had on three just incredible guests. And then the second hour, Liberty Roundtable Live, we had on John Harvey, a fourth incredible guest from the conference. And John Harvey is Utah State Director of Blexit Utah. He says, I'm not a black American. I'm an American. Amen to that reality check. The late Lloyd Marcus, dear friend of mine too, singer for Liberty, etc., used to say, I'm an unhyphenated American. Well, that's the same principle John's getting around here, or getting at right here, when he says, hey, I'm not a black American. I'm just an American. Oh, I happen to be black, but that's that's not, you know, I don't identify as a black first, American second. I'm an American. And I think we all should have that attitude. Blexit.com for the website for John. He also does what's called the Modern Conservative Podcast. Check it out. He's been around for quite a while, doing a great job. He's lived in Idaho for a long time and Utah for a long time. And he doesn't believe we're all racists, ladies and gentlemen. He believes white people have been very kind to him. He's experienced racism, but he believes with tenacity and kindness and hard work, you can overcome it. And boy, howdy, did he tell a story about getting an $80,000 check that he turned down to highlight that reality. Yeah, he was discriminated against. And once they realized what kind of a discriminatory reality he experienced, they tried to write him a check. And he said, you know, normally I'd love that check, but not under those circumstances. No, thank you. I'll work hard and I'll earn my money on my own merits. What a real man. What an example, ladies and gentlemen. We also talked about the state of Florida sued the Biden administration and NASA over their coronavirus vaccine mandate for federal contractors. Ron DeSantis doing a great, great job. Ron DeSantis made the announcement at a news conference last Thursday morning, where he described the mandate for federal contractors as heavy-handed and an overreach by the federal government. Amen to that. Ron's right. And I pray for Florida. I'm glad they have such a good governor that's standing up and doing a pretty dang good job now. The question is, will he take on Trump in 24? Or will he step back and let the good old boys let Trump run first? What's going to happen there? Don't know. We will keep an eye on that ball just for you. And I might clearly add, Ron DeSantis is a great guy. But, you know, I'm afraid that once Ron gets out of office, I'm afraid that if you're not very careful, we know we think that Florida's a bastion of freedom now, and I pray that it remains so. But there's a lot of big money and a lot of liberals coming down there. And I don't know what you call those folks, but whatever they do, they come down to the South and, you know, they got a lot of money and a lot of influence. If you're not very careful, although Florida is a bastion of liberty now because of DeSantis and a few people, if you're not very careful, it could turn and Florida could become a very, very liberal state in a hurry. I pray it doesn't happen, but it would be against the general people's will. I know that as well. But a few can, you know, I look at Montana, and it's a state like that. Wyoming's kind of a state like that. Great, great conservative people on the ground, but the liberals have come in with big money, plenty of influence as well. So be very wary of that. Which was worse, by the way, we asked John, 2020 or 2021? He says the answer is 2022. Amen to that. He says, why? Because they're on a bender to take away your liberties, and if we let them, 22 will be the worst year of all. Sad but true. We ask ourselves what the scariest thing is about the federal government today. And I mentioned that I think the scariest thing about our government today, ladies and gentlemen, is the fact that most Americans are still not engaged. They're still entertained with, you know, bread and circus. All right? The most scary thing about America, in my opinion, is that the American people still are not engaged and don't know what's going on, for the most part. They don't realize that, hey, the evil cabal, the deep state, whatever term you want to use, shadow government, they are going for broke to create a reset. When I say reset, I mean everything. Morals, finances, the great reset. And most Americans aren't realizing the precipice we're on. And that's the scariest thing about America today. Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org. Welcome to Liberty Roundtable Live. Sir, welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me back, Sam. Appreciate you.
I was doing a quick recap of Saturday's broadcast. And at the end of the hour on Saturday, we were talking about which was worse, 21 or 20. And the answer we came up with is 22, because the future doesn't look bright unless Americans start to stand up. And then we said, what was the most scary thing about government today that you can think of? And my answer was that the people in the United States are simply not engaged, lol. They're not aware of the freight train of coming. They're not caught up on what precipice we sit on in America, that are crossroads or whatever, Rubicon, whatever you want to use for it. What would your answer be?
Yeah, very similar to that, Sam. Certainly, I think more people than ever before are waking up because of the shackles are tightening, so to speak, and that's beginning to waken a lot of people. I find that encouraging, but, the very last article that I looked at last night and prepared to discuss this morning was about this very thing, about the official enemy of the state and what the state's going to do about it, right? I mean, they want to propose a problem and then propose a solution to that problem. It's this a Hegelian dialectic where they create the problem, then they create the proposal, the solution for the problem, and then they synthesize or compromise in some in-between state, basically create this new normal. The Great Reset is what they're after. And whether we're going to be able to stop the Great Reset, that's the big question. It's going to take a lot of determined people like you and me, Sam. We just need more people. Awake.
No doubt about it. The Weekend Act Conference brought those people to the forefront. I'll tell you that right now. We'll talk about that a little bit. We'll also talk about the incredible event about critical race theory that was just had last Thursday evening as well, with Lowell Nelson in seconds on your radio.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better having a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
Back with you live, Lowell Nelson, CampaignForLiberty.org, doing a phenomenal job. So C.L. Bryant is a co-host, or I'm sorry, is a host on this radio network, LovingLiberty.net. I do my show, Beth Ann Schoenberg does her show, and then C.L. Bryant takes to the airwaves 2 hours a day, Monday through Friday. He's on Red State Radio as well. He's all over the place. He used to work and be with the NAACP for a long time, and now he's at Freedom Works, doing a great job spelling out liberty everywhere, traveling, speaking. He's a senior fellow at that organization. So he was in Utah, but he literally came back a week later, Lowell.
He sure did. And it was a treat to have him. He, along with a dozen other speakers, talk about critical race theory here in our public schools. Nathan Osmond was there to sing several rousing, inspiring musical numbers. We had a couple of students, one in middle school, one in college, talk about the impact of CRT in the classroom. and its impact on them and those around them. Essentially, they felt very uncomfortable when the teachers basically forced the class to discuss CRT and the implications of that. Very uncomfortable. A number of teachers and parents addressed the group as well. But the keynote and final speaker was C.L. Bryant. Boy, Sam, he is a wonderful orator. And we just have to retell this one story he told. I think he repeated it both at this event and at the Liberty Conference last week. And, of course, I can't do it justice, but it is a worthwhile story. So you can listen for it. The next time you listen to C.L., you can listen for this story. But one day he was singing along with James Brown, "Say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud," you know, as he approached his father one day. And his dad looked him in the eye and said, "Son, I didn't do all I've done for you so you could be black and proud. I did it all so you could be free." And so CL continues to spread the truth today that basically we're all members of humankind, born to be free. You know, not born to be black and born to be white and red and brown and yellow. You know, those are differences that divide us. He says we must not allow our differences to become the battle lines that separate us from one another. What a great message, Sam. We all children of a loving Heavenly Father, and we need to be one family down here, humankind, not be divided on differences. Sam?
There's no doubt CL is a truth teller. CL has his heart in the right place. There's no doubt about it. And I had the chance to go eat dinner with CL and a few other people right before he spoke on Thursday night. And I'm telling you right now, you know, there's a lot of people that have been in a lot of important positions and places. CL is one of those people. He literally sat on two different committees for Donald Trump. He's with FreedomWorks, one of the greatest, biggest organizations in America. They've got millions of people on the ground. It's incredible what they've got going on. But I bring this up because not only has he been in those circles, but sometimes those people, when they get in those circles, are hard to get a hold of, or you know, you can't. They're not mere mortals like the rest of us. Almost it feels like, right? But I'm telling you right now, CL has the ability to kind of bridge that gap. He talks and deals with just mere mortals every day. You can get a hold of him. He's a normal guy. But yet he's had this tremendous influence through his incredible career as well. That's something very unique. Most people probably may not know about C.L. Bryant. I know everybody can't get a hold of him because, I mean, he can't spend time with just 300 plus million people in America. But I'm just saying C.L. is approachable. You can get a hold of him and talk to him on a personal level. Very few of those, quote, rock star status kind of people are like that, Lowell. That's something really to note.
Well, that's a great point, Sam. And I noticed as I worked with all the speakers at the Liberty Conference last week, you know, some of them were really quite approachable, and they were happy to give out their phone number. You know, they trusted that we weren't going to abuse that privilege, that port of access to them. You know, Peter McCullough was another wonderful, wonderful gentleman who was very approachable, just like CL. And, you know, there were quite a few of them, Tim Foley and others. You know, I couldn't name them all. I'm sure I'd leave somebody out. But then you're right. There are some that were not, and that's unfortunate because they have a message to tell and they need to get it out. And just important. I really appreciated CL, his honesty, his integrity, and his what do you call it? Yeah, sincerity is not correct. His authenticity was what I really appreciated about him.
Yeah, and a lot of the speakers are that way. And, you know, I understand I'm a talk show host and a lot of people try to get a hold of me and everybody wants to just talk my ear off and take forever and all this kind of stuff. And so I get the desire and the understanding that, hey, you've got to have somebody kind of help and take the calls first and kind of vet who you spend time with and who you talk to. And I understand that and a little bit of that makes sense. But when you go too far, it becomes unwarranted. And I bring that up just because if you're not very careful, you can isolate yourself and almost turn into an elitist. Well, I'm telling you right now, CL has not done that. And he's got a busy enough schedule, and he's in enough important places to where that could easily be done. But he chooses not to. And I just have a lot of tremendous respect for him, his leadership, and the general point that he's making is, hey, folks, he says this, you guys have been hoodwinked. You guys have been bamboozled. Because I was at this event as well Thursday night. And he basically said, you know, look, They're lying to you. We don't need to divide over race. We don't need to use race as the lens for everything. Why don't we use morality and that we're all God's children? He didn't say it in these exact words. These are the words that I use. We're all God's children. When are we going to act like it? But he uses the same idea that, you know what, when are we going to look through God, family, and country lens and stand shoulder to shoulder for the sacred cause of liberty? And why don't we unite against those who want to steal our liberty from us? And the sooner you do that, ladies and gentlemen, the sooner you will reject the bamboozlement, et cetera. And anyway, tremendous speech by CL. By the way, Steve Christensen spoke at the Weekend Act conference as well, and he's just as advocating of jettisoning the critical race theory dishonesty as we are, lol.
He sure is, Sam. He talked about election integrity there at the Liberty Conference. And then suddenly, just last week, Sam, just a few days ago, announced his resignation from the Utah legislature. He said it was motivated by the increasing attacks on his wife and family from his critics. He said, quote, "I did not expect to see individuals attack my wife as they have, nor to see the significance of the impact of those attacks on her and our family. Primarily for that reason, it has become necessary to pause," he said. And that's very interesting. You know, he chose his words carefully, to pause. I mean, I hope he comes back into the politics and continues to push for an audit of the 2020 election results in Utah. I mean, but that's probably what got the bullies up in arms and pushing against him, was his vigor with which he was pushing for the 2020 election audit. You know, he's convinced that there are some anomalies in the results that may point to fraud. He was also planning to run legislation in this upcoming January session of the legislature to prohibit the teaching of controversial subjects in schools like CRT and like social-emotional learning and so forth. That was a very surprising bit of news, because, you know, there are a lot of liberty-minded people rallying around Senator Steve Christiansen because of his position against critical race theory and because of his position for election integrity. So turns out that the Republican delegates in House District 47 will choose Christiansen's replacement very soon, and this is why, Sam, it is very important for Utahns to run for seats, county delegate seats or state delegate seats in their precincts, because you never know when you're going to be tasked to choose a candidate to fill a vacancy like this. You might be interested to know, Sam, that Craig Hall's replacement, Representative Hall, was just tapped to become a judge on the court here in Utah. His replacement, Judy Weeks Rohner, who I understand is also a very good liberty-minded person, she was chosen by 28 delegates on a 21-7 vote, Sam. That's how Weeks Rohner was selected to fill the Craig Hall vacancy. And it turns out that Weeks Rohner helped to organize a massive signature-gathering effort to put changes to the state's tax law on the ballot, right? This referendum last year about this time, he was instrumental in getting that referendum off the ground. And because of that referendum, the state legislature backed down on their proposed tax increase, and she made a name for herself and is now going to be a member of the Utah legislature. So that's why it's so important for good liberty-minded people to become delegates at the county level and or the state level right here in Utah. You never know when you get an opportunity to choose a replacement like this, and pretty amazing. 21-7 vote, Judy Weeks Rohner is now in the Utah legislature. Sam?
Sad tale to tell, ladies and gentlemen. Our prayers are with Steve Christensen and family, though, because I'll tell you what, he is the real deal. And the sad part is he's now out because of the abuse. That's why I give these speeches on a clarion call for civility, folks. It's gotten over the top and out of control. Lowell Nelson in seconds on your radio.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
You USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
More than 24,000 New York City workers will be forced to stay home Monday when Mayor de Blasio's COVID-19 vaccine mandate goes into effect, raising concerns about the impact on emergency response times in the five boroughs. One fire death over the weekend in New York City is being blamed on slow response times. As Democrat Congresswoman AOC announced the world will come to an end in 12 years if nothing is done to climate change, President Biden's ambitions to lead the world in slowing the planet's warming will be tested on two continents this week. COP26, or the 26th Conference of the Parties, climate talks in Glasgow, Scotland, is going on now through November 12th. Election Day 2021 is an off year across the United States, but it has mostly drawn attention to the competitive race for Virginia governor. It should be noted several major cities, including New York, Boston, Atlanta, and Minneapolis, will elect mayors on Tuesday. USA Radio News.
It's been tough talking to my doctor about constipation with belly pain, discomfort, and bloating. I finally laid all my symptoms out there and how they keep coming back. She said I may have irritable bowel syndrome with constipation, or IBS-C. We agreed it's time to try something different.
Linzess, or linaclotide, is a prescription medicine that treats IBS-C in adults. Linzess works differently than laxatives. It lets you have more frequent and complete bowel movements and helps relieve overall abdominal symptoms, belly pain, discomfort, and bloating. These symptoms were studied in combination, not individually. Do not give Linzess to children less than 6, and it should not be given to children 6 to less than 18. It may harm them. Do not take Linzess if you have a bowel blockage. Get immediate help if you develop unusual or severe stomach pain, especially with bloody or black stools. The most common side effect is diarrhea, sometimes severe. If it's severe, stop taking Linzess and call your doctor right away. Other side effects include gas, stomach area pain, and swelling. There could be more to your story with IBS-C. Visit a doctor in person or online. Say yes to Linzess. Learn more at Linzess.com or call 1-800-LINZESS. Sponsored by AbbVie and Ironwood Pharmaceuticals.
In less than a year, America went from energy independence to not being energy independent. Gas prices are a direct result.
Americans are paying more for everyday goods and services, leading some to fear an impending inflation crisis. One of the examples of increased prices is gasoline. But Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm assures on NBC's Meet the Press that prices won't stay high forever.
The Energy Information Agency has said that by projected, again, it's very volatile, but yep, they said that by the beginning of December, the prices should come down for at the pump to $3.05. We'll see if that actually happens, but they are the best objective data that we have.
Critics argue the Biden administration's policies on energy, such as shutting down the Keystone XL pipeline, are contributing to rising gas prices. From the USA Radio News Phoenix Bureau, I'm Tim Berg.
As you get this Monday going, thanks for listening. We are USA Radio News.
All right, back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Bushman, Lowell Nelson, CampaignForLiberty.org, doing a phenomenal job on your radio. So, Lowell, should we lock down the number of Supreme Court justices to 9? Should we have an amendment to the Constitution to get that done? That's the topic on the table next, huh?
It sure is, Sam. That's the topic of a resolution that will be considered by the Utah Republican Party's State Central Committee on November 13. That's not very far away. That's just a couple weeks away. I'm a member of that committee, and I want to address this issue squarely, and so I'm bringing it here now. I imagine that there are probably a number of states where this is a topic for discussion. I'm not enamored with the idea, Sam. And here is why. And I do want to get your thoughts on this. But the framers had the opportunity to set the number of justices, but they, you know, had they wanted, but they left that in the hands of Congress. They wanted Congress to have flexibility, and it turns out that right in the Constitution itself, it says that Congress shall, you know, regulate the Supreme Court, you know, and they can, by a majority vote, Sam, they can stipulate what subjects or what matters the U.S. Supreme Court can take up. You know, it's not just carte blanche. The Congress can limit the jurisdiction, the appellate jurisdiction of the U.S. Supreme Court. So they could, Congress could, by a majority vote, say, okay, U.S. Supreme Court may not rule on any matter relating to abortion. They could do that if they, and by simple majority vote, they could say that, and they would thereby strip the U.S. Supreme Court of the authority to rule on abortion if they wanted to, right? And yet here this group is wanting to amend the Constitution and stipulate that the number of justices be nine, be limited to nine, because they're afraid that the Democrats are going to pack the court and add so many more justices, liberal justices, that the could then rule the way they want, right? And so it makes the Supreme Court this bouncing basketball, bouncing back and forth between, you know, progressive and conservative, back and forth, depending on who's in power in Congress. And I just think it's a backwards idea. I don't believe that it ought to be the political basketball, but instead we ought to have a truer understanding of what the U.S. Supreme Court can and ought to rule on. And my opinion is that they should not be ruling on all of the thousands of things that they consider every year. They should rule on truly things that were given to the general government. And, you know, the states have plenary authority for all domestic issues like health care and education and police force and so forth. The U.S. Supreme Court should be ruling on none of those matters. They get between 7,000 and 8,000 petitions every year, and they hear about 80 cases. That is 1%, folks. And so they only take up 1% of the cases they're asked to take up. Why are they getting so many cases? Because everybody in the U.S. thinks that the U.S. Supreme Court has the final say on all matters, and that's simply not true. The states have the final say, and we could talk about why that's the case here in a minute, Sam, but I do want to get your opinion on this idea that the number of justices needs to be nailed down to no more than nine people. Sam?
So my take on this is as follows. You know, I am a traditionalist in the sense that I don't believe that the Constitution is this elastic document that you can make say or, you know, stretch here and there and do whatever you want. I believe in the traditional interpretations of the supreme law of the land. I am convinced that it's far from perfect, but it's the best we've got by far, should be the political religion of our nation. And the Constitution, ladies and gentlemen, they mean what they say, and they say what they mean, and they're very good at it, if we are moral and if we honor it. But again, if we're immoral, if we turn our backs on it, if we just say it's a piece of paper, it means nothing, and we don't have those principles in our hearts, ladies and gentlemen, if we don't understand the principles and truly believe that they are the solutions, then we're in trouble. And so I use that backdrop discussion to highlight where we are. So we can't balance our budget at the federal government level, so then we want an amendment to balance the budget. Ladies and gentlemen, an amendment's not going to balance the budget. It never will. If you don't have good, honest people that will balance the budget, you're in trouble. And if you don't elect good, honest people to balance the budget, forget it. So we have a debt ceiling. They ignore it every single time they raise it. Why even have it if you're going to raise it all the time? Why even have a balanced budget amendment if you'll just ignore the balanced budget amendment? Well, I believe the same thing is true here, Lowell. I don't care if we have 7 justices, 5 justices, 9 justices, 11 justices. They want to pack the court whenever they don't get what they want out of the court because they're immoral. Okay, they're not interested in the court telling you the truth constitutionally. The courts now are so politically manipulated and divisive that the justices always have to create a ruling that's just down the line. Give somebody their little handout, give somebody their little handout, and try to walk this tightrope of let's not offend people, let's try to, you know, offend the least amount of people possible, rather than laying down the honest constitutional law-abiding truth. They want to play games here. And so I don't think that another law is going to do any good. You say, well, you can only lock it at 9. We're going to create an amendment. All the states have got a mandate that it's 9. And then Congress, though, could just overrule it. So I look at the simple majority that you spoke of a second ago. All they do is create a law that says we got to have a supermajority. And then, oh, my goodness, the supermajority is horrible when it's not the party in power. Then they're like, oh, my goodness, we got to get rid of that supermajority. It's cursed. It's awful. And then they, no, don't get rid of it. It'll backfire. And when it's not your turn, the enemies will use it to get at you. And we just go back and forth with this dishonesty and immorality. We don't look for ways to obey the supreme law of the land and honor it and give it its fair checks and balances. Congress can reign in the courts whenever they want to. They can slap the courts down and say, you're wrong. The courts can slap the Congress down. They both can slap the president down. These checks and balances are the key to the exercise, ladies and gentlemen. It's not in more legislation. It's not in more, Supreme Court justices demanding edicts from the bench, creating activism on the bench rather than interpreting law. Okay, each group needs to morally stay within their lane. And each lane should act as a check and balance should there be a misstep. It shouldn't be constant, well, the court's out of control and we're not going to rein in activists because we don't want to hold them accountable. We're just going to make new laws to tell them we're the boss. And we run around and play these games. If the judges are out of line, impeach them. You don't need to make a new law to rein them in. Just impeach them. Kick that thug out and get somebody who's honorable, who cares about their role and their lane, and who will operate within their lane. And if you don't start doing that, you're going to have, instead of 10,000 laws on the books, you're going to have 1,000,000 laws. There's not even 1,000,000, right? You're going to have 1,000,000,000 laws on the books. You think that's going to make anything better? You've got to have the American people engaged, ladies and gentlemen, to really elect those who are honorable and who will stay within their lane. And then you've got to let the checks and balances vertically and horizontally become the rule of law once again. And unless you do that, unless some moral people do that, it's curtains. Okay, so I'm not for it because I don't think it'll do any good. I think it'll be a waste of time, lol.
Yeah, I think it's a waste of time too, Sam. It's basically a distraction. It's a shiny object to distract us from the real issue, which is what you said, is a moral government, moral society, moral legislators, moral congressmen making the right decisions. And just to point out this horizontal check and balance you're talking about, let me be very explicit about that. The states are the entities that created the general government. The states are parties to the compact, right? And Thomas Jefferson pointed this out very clearly in the Kentucky Resolutions of 1798 when he wrote, "The government created by this compact," meaning the general government, "was not made the exclusive or final judge of the extent of the powers delegated to itself, since that would have made its discretion, not the Constitution, the measure of its powers. But that, as in all other cases of compact among powers having no common judge, each party," meaning each state, because the states are parties to the compact, he writes, "each party," meaning each state, "has an equal right to judge for itself as well of infractions as of the mode and measure of redress," meaning each state is the one to determine the constitutionality of any particular act of the general government. And James Madison follows this up in the report of 1800, emphatically asserting that states retain absolute authority to determine the constitutionality of an action. When he wrote there, quote, "The states, then being the parties to the constitutional compact and in their sovereign capacity, it follows of necessity that there can be no tribunal above their authority," right? Everybody thinks the U.S. Supreme Court is above the states. That is not true.
Ladies and gentlemen, the states need to nullify now liberally, and the Congress needs to impeach out-of-control activist judges. If we had that happening using the checks and balances, we don't need any new laws. It would already be solved. I challenge anybody to prove that wrong. The founders were incredibly intelligent, ladies and gentlemen, and their solutions should be on the table. Hang tight.
The Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The Foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
The spirit of the American West is live and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues affecting the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas like the 2021 Real Buckaroo Calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Well, my mom smokes and my dad smokes, and I saw them smoking, so I tried it. They're telling me not to smoke, but they smoke themselves.
When it comes to smoking, are you sending mixed signals?
But when you teach someone a certain way to do things and you go back on that certain way, it sends mixed signals to the person that they're trying to teach. The parents need to be the example.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Wow, ladies and gentlemen, hard-hitting talk at your fingertips. So I think the checks and balances are key. States understanding their proper role in the dual sovereignty reality that Anthony Scalia spoke of, and moral people demanding and insisting on the checks and balances. We need to start there. We don't need new lawns. We don't need to lock the Supreme Court justices at 9. What we need to do is elect people who will demand accountability. Look, impeach activist thug judges that don't obey the law. If they try to do more than interpret the law, make the law, then impeach them. If they try to make laws that don't apply to you as a state, nullify them. Okay, the checks and balances are front and center and are the solution, ladies and gentlemen. But John Rappaport writes an article called Behind Closed Doors that highlights what I'm talking about. Lol.
Highlights the immorality of people in positions of persuasive authority over other people. You're right. You know, John Rappaport, he describes the animal cruelty that's being visited on animals and humans in medical research labs, all in the name of science, of course, and it is appalling. To prove their hypotheses about germs causing diseases, he writes, researchers will first do anything to weaken animals. So it then seems that injecting them with purported germs is infecting them and making them sick. So this is what he calls prep work. This prep work to weaken animals includes some of the following things, Sam. Destructive genetic modification, the injection of toxic chemicals and drugs, the removal of the animal's immune systems, the injection of toxic serums composed of material taken from other animal species, exposing the animals to high doses of radiation, the grafting of material onto the animals from other species, the caging and isolation of the animals for long periods of time, which produces great stress and immune system suppression, drilling holes in animals and attaching restraints and sensors to them and inside of them, berating the animals, treating them as objects, conducting research in unsanitary and unclean facilities, and then finally issuing falsified records to support lies about outcomes in order to prove predestined conclusions. The entire catalog of torture, he writes, is couched and concealed in dry technical language and euphemism. Medical journals describe nothing about the animals' reactions to this brutal savagery. If they did, the researchers would be exposed as rank sadists, their work would be discredited, and eventually there would be public uproar. End of quote. Sam, so I love animals as much as anyone. In fact, I believe one's character is revealed in the way he treats his animals, be they pets or livestock or wild game. And so I wanted to highlight this chunk of this article by John Rappaport because we need honest researchers with strong moral ethics if we hope to have confidence in their research. You know, researchers involved with the COVID vaccine are ignoring data they don't like. They're not even collecting data that they know will look dismal. For example, they didn't test the vaccine on on people 80 years and older, for example, because they didn't want any possibility of an adverse outcome to taint the so-called confidence they had in their vax. And so basically it comes down to this, Sam. We need good people everywhere, whether you're a lab researcher or a politician, to stand up for truth and virtue. You know, we need a Karen Kingston in every lab. Karen, as you recall, is the whistleblower, the former Pfizer executive who blew the lid off the COVID vaccine. And the data she presented indicated that 3/4 of COVID patients are fully vaccinated and 4/5 of hospitalized patients are fully vaccinated. You know, and then, but Pfizer ignored the obvious conclusions of their studies and pushed forward with the vaccinations anyway, obviously creating big, big problems, because the clot shot is obviously more trouble, more problematic than not getting it at all. And as you know, Sam, through October 22nd, there have been reported to the CDC's database, VAERS, over 837,000 adverse events. 17,600 of them have been deaths, 86,000 hospitalizations, 2,700 miscarriages, 8,600 heart attacks, 11,000 myocarditis and pericarditis patients, and so forth. Coercing people to get these clot shots is criminal, in my opinion, Sam. It's absolutely criminal.
It is criminal, ladies and gentlemen. It is something, I don't even know how to respond to this, because, ladies and gentlemen, the dishonesty, really the issue is honesty here with all this, okay? Karen Kingston, doing a phenomenal job as a whistleblower, blew the lid off of this thing. You know what? Most people are vaccinated that are getting COVID now and going to the hospitals, ladies and gentlemen. Through October 22nd, for example, October 22nd, there have been reported to the CDC's VAERS database over 837,000 adverse events, 17,600 plus deaths, 86,000 hospitalizations, 2,700 miscarriages, 8,600 heart attacks. You look at this and you go, what? Forcing people to get this is criminal. But I look at all these adverse events that you mentioned and that I kind of, again, summarize here, lol, and say, you know what? The experts tell you that about 1% of the adverse information really gets reported to VAERS. So what the real numbers are, we have no idea, but we know that it's at least 10 times that number. That means like 170,000 deaths. That means, and you think about that, and you think in time it's going to probably eclipse the real death from COVID if their numbers are even correct. I challenge their numbers big time, but suffice it to say, this is disaster. They're adding insult to injury in a very criminal way, and they know it, lol.
They absolutely know it, Sam. And it takes people with ethics like Karen Kingston, who decided, you know what, she can't keep lying to the people. She's an honest person. She has some integrity. She's going to come forth with the truth and expose the dishonesty of the organization for which she formerly worked. And that takes courage. That takes guts. And so hats off to her and any other whistleblowers, because she's not alone. There are others who have come forward, and doctors, for example, who risk their licenses simply to tell the truth. Dr. Ryan Cole of Idaho, for example, Dr. Peter McCullough of Texas. These are some of the most renowned, world-renowned researchers and doctors coming forward with the truth day after day. And I applaud them. I pray for them. And I'm so glad that they are willing to risk what, you know, their professional lives in order to bring the truth forward to the people. Now, what do we do with it, folks? We need to take that truth. We need to spread it around. And we need to stop the madness, this folly of moving along the path to the great reset, the great new normal. That's not a path we want to be on, Sam.
Amen to that, ladies and gentlemen. But the reason they're advocating for this, even though they know it's criminal, even though they know it's wrong, even though, you know, we go on and on, is because they're creating the great new normal, ladies and gentlemen. They're using the purge to force the new normal. CJ Hopkins, in her incredible article, has the details.
Hopkins writes that, quote, people who refuse to convert to the new official ideology are now being segregated, stripped of their jobs, banned from attending schools, denied medical treatment, and otherwise persecuted. Relentless official propaganda demonizing the unvaccinated is being pumped out by the corporate and state media, government leaders, health officials, and shrieking fanatics on social media. Protesting the new normal is now outlawed in some countries, Sam, such as Australia, where you can be arrested for a Facebook post. Hopkins then makes some general observations, which I find to be very true. Quote, the lifeblood of totalitarianism is fear. Fear of both the system's official enemy, which is constantly stoked with propaganda, and of the totalitarian system itself. That the brutality of the system is rationalized by the threat posed by the official enemy doesn't make it any less brutal or terrifying. Under totalitarian systems of any type or scale, fear is a constant, and there is no escape from it, end of quote. Which reminds me, Sam, of John Adams' statement, fear is the foundation of most government. You know, that's very true. The foundation of the current totalitarian approach is fear. Here, COVID is the official enemy. COVID is the official enemy right now, folks. And Hopkins continues, quote, the masses' fear is then channeled into hatred. Hatred of the official Untermenschen, right? Untermenschen is a Nazi word for the non-Aryan inferior people, meaning the Jews, the blacks, the mentally disabled, etc. In this case, the Untermenschen is the unvaccinated, right? So COVID's the enemy. The unvaccinated is the Untermenschen. Basically, who you're supposed to hate and scapegoat, and that's what's happening now. It's happening right in front of our eyes, Sam. Day after day, month after month, the masses have been subjected to the most destructive psychological terror campaign in the history of psychological terror. And sadly, many of them have been reduced to paranoid invalids, afraid of the outdoors, afraid of human contact, afraid of their own children, afraid of their own parents, morbidly obsessed with disease and death, and consumed with hatred of the unvaccinated, Sam. You got a comment on this article. I better not continue on, but
well, let me make this
sad.
Quick comment. We're almost out of time, but I'm going to say this. The lie continues to force the great, quote, new normal or great reset or whatever we want to talk about on the people. If you refuse in any way to go along with the, quote, new official ideology, it's almost become a religion, ladies and gentlemen. They want you to convert to the new official ideology. And if you don't, ladies and gentlemen, they're flat out going to persecute you, lol.
Yep, that's what they're doing, Sam. If you don't wear the mask in the airport, you're going to hear about it. Well, the solution there is to throw a monkey wrench into the machinery, as many monkey wrenches as possible and as often as possible. You know, if you get fired from your job, then you become an entrepreneur. You keep doing what you do, follow your passion, do what makes money and helps other people obtain what they want. That's the magic of capitalism. Join others to supply the products and services that you're supplying in your current job. Use common sense, but defy irrational and unlawful edicts whenever possible, Sam.
Amen to that, ladies and gentlemen. Flat out of time, but incredible columns, incredible information from Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org, doing a phenomenal job as always. Thank you, sir. We'll talk soon.
You're welcome, Sam. God bless you.
It's become a pagan religion, ladies and gentlemen. They don't care if it's witchcraft or what it is, anything but the true God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob will do for these, in my opinion, retrobates. That's my humble opinion, to which I'm entitled. We'll come back and talk about witchcraft and what it's doing to America next hour in seconds. God save the Republic of the United States of America.